I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So just a little postscript for you, dear listeners. When we closed last night's phone call between Aaron, Michael and myself, the news was breaking online that Damien Egan, Mayor of Lewisham, had actually signed a document withdrawing the conditional land sale for the Dens car park and also the compulsory purchase orders associated with it, which has been the nub of the battle for the Den over these past 3 years. So this follows a lot of shuttle diplomacy, I suppose you'd call it, between Millwall FC, Renewal, the villainous developers who are planning to take land that would force us away from Bermondsey, probably out to the netherworld of Kent, some shopping centre style football stadium, Ebbsfleet, Dartford, you know the rest of it. So basically, Damien Egan signed documents last night in Lewisham to withdraw the threat to our football ground, effectively, because although it was only the car park, the club did have and does have plans to redevelop the area, which would secure our club's future in Bermondsey. So to put this in a nutshell, we won it. How about that? People power, football fan power, teamed up with some fantastic support from Barney Ronan, The Guardian, which led on to other coverage, international coverage at one point in the height of the campaign. We went through that election campaign. The social media battle that took place with the AMS, Mickey Simpson. I want to name check Mickey Simpson, Barney Roney, and one mystery man that many of you won't know, but was actually critical to the battle, which was our forensic financial investigator, produced all those documents that enabled us to hit so hard, so regularly on the old regime of Lewisham Council. So hats off to those that have made this happen. On our side, Barney, Mickey, Al, Councillor Hall, who was within Lewisham Council's remit and supported us all through. Many others within the council, within the unions at Lewisham, and others who we can't name because people have jobs and livelihoods, so you'll appreciate that we're not going to go any further than with that. I hope you understand that. And also to all of those who supported us online, that's you, probably, dear listener, because this was a battle that looked very, very grim when I got involved in it in 2016. I really didn't think we'd do any more than mount an honourable Custer's last stand at the Little Big Horn. We put up a fight, but I couldn't see how we could win it. But there you are. Some battles, you win just because you don't give up. Let that be a lesson to us all. People can change things if they work together. And that's what happened with the Battle of the Den. Millwall Football Club has a massive opportunity now, won by its fans. Let's not beat around the bush. We had a lot of support from the media and from councillors and politicians across all the parties. But Millwall Football Club now has a chance to secure its financial future in Bermondsey, in the place that we all regard as our spiritual home, as a result of the efforts of its much maligned, much despised fan base. That's you, dear listener, because without that support, nothing would have happened, and the football club would probably be kicking off now at the Ebbsfleet Shopping Centre Stadium or some abomination like that. So it's all been done a bit on the hoof, because, as I say, this news broke last night, so I've recorded this very much, without any scripting. I just want to say thank you to you all. Thank you to all the chaps that were involved in the campaign. We won.
Good evening, welcome to Actung Millwall on your Thursday night. This is the Real Millwall Fan Show, myself, Aaron. Joining me this week, well, that's a big old sign. They won, as Nick Hart, the daddy, that is Nick Hart, poor Hollywood lookalike, back in the building. Nick, how are you, pal?
I'm good, Aaron, actually. That was a big sigh, and I've got to keep remembering. I bought myself, listeners will need to know, I have a set of headphones with a microphone, and it seems to record every breath I take, as a Police song, isn't it? And I've got, whenever I do let out a sigh, it seems to pick it up quite nicely. So I've got to try and keep my my demeanour upbeat, haven't I, after that great win last weekend. Raised everyone's spirits.
Definitely. And we've got our own hybrid version. He's a cross between David Dimbleby and Dale Winton. He is our supermarket. So we've got the bargain hunter himself, Mr. Mickey Avery. You're right, pal.
I'm surrounded by inflatables and I'm down the aisle.
Just on a side note, Mickey, I did visit the club shop on Saturday and yeah, I couldn't find the shorts I wanted, so yeah, we'll leave that one as it is. We're going to be looking back this evening at Millwall's 2-1 win over Leeds United. Of course, managerial chat continues. We're going to be, I'd say, sort of like summing up and recapping on what we talked about last week, because last week,
yeah,
I re-listened to our pod last week and it was just a bit of a giant free-for-all, because I think, obviously, with sort of raw emotion at the fact that Neil Harris resigned sort of 10 minutes before we went on air, if you like, it maybe sort of, you know, brought out different ideas and whatnot. But a week has gone past. Millwall picked up 3 points. We've spoken to Adam Barrett, both you and I, Nick, and what a brilliant guy he is. But let's just sum up Saturday, Nick. Millwall 2, Leeds 1.
Well, massive, massive win that was, really, because you know, obviously there'd been a weight on the club's shoulders since August. We hadn't won at all, and it was a win that was badly needed. It's just such a shame, and I don't know what you think, Michael, but I think it's just such a shame that this win, which was a kind of a classic Neil Harris win in many respects, perhaps only the attacking substitution towards the end rather than a defensive substitution, was anything different to what we would have produced on a classic Neil Harris versus Leeds United match day. That was, you know, we had a stroke of luck, if you want, with the penalty, because I think subsequently the red card has been rescinded by the Football League for the Leeds defender. So you can argue as a slight touch of luck. Was it nous to win that penalty? Was it luck? Who knows? But anyway, there it was. We've got a goal ahead. And of course, then the crowd come into play for what is always a great pantomime occasion, the visit of Leeds United. And the rest is, you know, the rest almost wrote itself, really. And I just find it such a shame that Neil couldn't find that performance, the players playing with the freedom. And you know, we all watched, I know we all have our different ideas on who was man of the match, but we've watched Tom Bradshaw perform out of his skin, Jed Wallace playing with freedom that we haven't seen from a Millwall winger stroke central midfield for a long time. And it all, the squad that Neil had put together during the course of the summertime finally clicked the day after he left. And there's something ironic in that.
Well, that and I mean, Halloween is in a couple of weeks' time, but the den turned into a cursed hellhole and we're able to shit out the penalty. I mean, from our point of view, Mike, where we were sitting on that, what, second or third row, you know, on the top deck, it seemed like a penalty, but didn't quite have the luxury of the reverse angle. And it turns out, you know, there was a bit of, what's the word? Acting? Do you want to call it acting? What do we call it? You know, sort of games.
A blatant foul. Okay,
well, there was contact. I believe there was contact. But he probably went a step too far.
Berardi is known. Gaetano Berardi for Leeds is known as someone who's a bit hot-tempered, someone who can, you know, who will chuck it about a bit. So whether Tom Bradshaw knows that from his time up north and knows, you know, I might be able to get something here or not, then, you know, that's let him if he does. I mean, you know, he won the penalty and it was emphatically smashed.
Beautifully put away.
Yeah. On the subject of the penalty and the red card and all that that comes with it. Now, the rule obviously changed this season. I think it was this season or last, wasn't it? Where basically you can't do the double jeopardy, so you can't get the penalty and the red card unless it's a deliberate attempt to stop play. Now, right. Was the red card rescinded because everyone thought it was a simulation or because they thought it was an accidental challenge that made contact? Because there you've got the red card rescinded, but you're still acknowledging it's a foul.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to check further. I mean, all I saw was...
Sorry to put you on the spot there, mate.
No, I don't know the answer to the question, to be honest. I mean, I presume that it was a red card given... well, the red card was rescinded because it was felt to be an accidental contact. There was contact, albeit maybe marginal. Maybe Tom Bradshaw's gone a step further in very slow motion. I mean, in real time, when we were sitting in the West Upper, I thought it was a penalty in real time. I think I said on the show, penalty. You know, that looked clear cut. With the benefit of super slow motion, you can see that he's gone a step too far, perhaps before he's gone down. But that's football. I mean, I don't begrudge Leeds having the red card rescinded. I don't know the answer to your question. I guess it would be because it was felt to be an accidental contact and then he's gone over. I don't think that was simulation. I just think the momentum took him forward and then down. That's the game, isn't it?
Maybe it was momentum. Whatever it was a brilliant finish and a brilliant goal to put Millwall 1-0 up. You know, I've watched a bit of Leeds this season. I've watched a bit of Bielsa. I'll tell you something, they don't look great. And rumours flying around today that his head's on the block. You know, that they're looking at, you know, potentially disposing of Bielsa's services. What did you make of Leeds in that first half? I mean, they weren't great. They were poor.
Well, I mean, they were down to 10 men, so there is that factor. But that said, they passed the ball around like... We've seen in the cup with Premier League teams that have gone to 10 men, they still pass the ball very well. They still pass and move. What they didn't do was carve out any clear cut chances, and that's the mill to the mill defence's credit. So they looked good probably in areas for me as an onlooker. They looked good in areas where it didn't matter terribly much. So you can pass the ball around, moving it from wing to wing. But if they weren't attacking that final third, which they weren't, then I don't know how many shots on goal they had. There couldn't have been that many. And I know that in the second half, you know, the goalkeeper was barely bothered by Leeds. So, you know, I think I wonder sometimes with Bielsa, and, you know, I don't follow Leeds regularly, but I do wonder whether there's this almost hero worship up there of him, because he's got this kind of intellectual, professorial kind of look about him. And there's this idea that we worship the foreign, the beautiful passing game, when actually they're fifth in the table now, behind Preston and Swansea, and you know, maybe he's not such a genius as everyone makes him out to be. That's what I took away from the game.
I think personally, and go with this one before you start chuckling, it's sort of like Rocky II. Okay. You know, Leeds were the Apollo Creed, who just glided around and were graceful and looked the part. Yeah. But we were the dogged, determined, got our head down and got stuck in. I remember saying to you, Nick, a number of times that I actually thought Leeds had a very good game. I thought that with 11 men, it could have been a completely different story, because there was a number of times within two to three passes, and I'm not talking hoofball, I'm talking well-directed long ball play, they got the ball from their back four to like a winger at times, or like that attacking midfield role, whereas it took Millwall kicking, screaming, punching, biting to make the same sort of ground. Not that what Millwall was doing was wrong, it was just playing to our strengths. I don't agree, Aaron, if totally honest, that I thought that Leeds were poor. I thought they were actually very good, as much as it pains me to say. I just think defensively we were very good.
Obviously, it's all to do with opinion, but with all due respect, Mickey, when you get one shot on target, create. They rely on Bamford too much. Let's be fair. They rely on Bamford too much. Helder Costa was supposed to be the answer. They brought him in from Wolves in the summer. And Nketiah, mate, you put that kid on at the Den. I'm sorry, you put him on at Elland Road in front of 35,000 screaming Leeds fans or 40,000 Leeds fans. Yeah, he'll be brilliant. But put him on at the Den and they'll eat him up. And I think, you know, you look at how Millwall worked from that back line to the midfield. It was absolutely brilliant. They just marshalled it completely. I think the only time they got caught out was for the goal. That was literally
dead cold at the start of the second half. Yeah.
Cold start completely. You know, the old glow plugs weren't going, you know. Sorry for the pun, Harry. But yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I remember in the last... Sorry. in the last days of Neil Harris's tenure, I've said this, so I'm kind of nailing myself up here, really, because we were saying how you can't concede large amounts of possession in this division and expect to win. And I remember saying this. Listeners will remember me saying this last show, couple of shows before, perhaps. I don't know which one. But yet there it is. We've beat Leeds convincingly. You're right, Aaron. One shot on target from Leeds to seven shots on target from Millwall. And that's on possession, which I was knocking Neil Harris on. Possession for Leeds of 68% of the ball and 32% for Millwall. And five shots off target, 12 shots off target for us. So, yeah, it's maybe I don't know much about football.
Maybe.
I think I've had a crisis. I think it's the instructions to play in the final third that's where the game counts, doesn't it? It's I remember years ago, and I remember when English football went through one of its periodic crises of conscience, and this must be going back to the late 80s, early 90s. There was this idea that the continentals, which would be the French, Germans, Italians, Spanish, and the rest, played possession football. They passed it, and therefore they were brilliant. And our players, by contrast, were kind of lumping 4-4-2, hit it long. And there was a study made by the FA, and I can't remember the name of the Charles something or other. It was like an FA tactician of the old school who actually advocated the long ball, played well, played to a good target man and knocked down as the quickest way that you got the ball into the final third of the opposition's penalty area. And this was held to be regressive dinosaur thinking of the old, you know, everything that was wrong with English football. I can't remember the chap's name, Charles something. Listeners might know it. It was a study made, and he'd analysed football to show that if you played sufficient numbers of well-played long balls, crosses in from the wings to a target man, you would get more goals than if you played what we would now call tic-tac possession-based football. And it's just interesting because in a way, last Saturday's game, where Mill played their style to the maximum, high adrenaline, tackling from the front all the way back. I mean, the quality of the tackling that we show from the front line through the midfield was top draw. But it shows 32%, and we had seven shots on target to Leeds 68% possession, just one shot on target. There it is. It's going back to Bielsa, he couldn't handle it there. He didn't know what to do with that kind of approach.
No, I mean, there's that video that's been put out of all him and his coaching staff telling one player to move forward and back and all that, and you just see Barrett just going, fucking give it some. On one side, it's absolutely brilliant. Magnificent performance. You know, you've got to say, I mean, some standout performers. Nick, you turned around on Saturday and said that you couldn't pick anyone out. I thought Ben Thompson, playing sort of as the second striker in the hole, was absolutely fantastic. Just linked up well and showed his quality. Malumbi was great. Shame about Ryan Leonard, obviously, with the injury. But I think Williams came on and just did his job very, very well.
Yep.
Bradshaw up top, absolutely fantastic. And a great finish. We didn't mention the goal. Really good finish for the second goal. Top class finish.
The finish for the second goal, I don't know what you think, Michael, I thought was, you know, I don't say it lightly, I thought it was a world-class finish. To get the cross coming in from the left from Ferguson, and to get the foot in just on the angle to kind of guide it in towards the right-hand post, if you'd see that in Serie A, you'd say there's the quality of the Italian forward. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they do for a living. And there it was, Tom Bradshaw at the Den. Quality mm-hmm. finish, I thought.
Yeah,
and that's and as we've said, that's a goalkeeper who was at Real Madrid, you know, regardless of how many games, he's trained with some of the best players in the entire world. You know, he's used to pressure, he's used to big games, he's used to not being intimidated, and you know, I'm not saying the goal intimidated him by any means, but you know, just a keeper of that quality, and he's beaten so easily by such a, because the touch was so good. It was just a phenomenal goal. And as you say, Nick, if that was a Sergio Aguero, that would be talked about for years. If that was a Cristiano Ronaldo, that'd be up there as a Ballon d'Or highlight moment. And I'm not exaggerating either. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal finish. And that, without putting a downer on Neil Harris too much, it makes you question if you've got Bradshaw, who is that sharp, and that fit, and that clinical. Because even when he's come off the bench, he's been scoring. Why hasn't he been starting?
Why hasn't he been starting? Why weren't the team given the instructions to play that high tempo from the front backwards? Why weren't they given the confidence to go out and do that? Because that's all Adam Barrett's done. I mean, you know, Aaron and I met him after the game. We did the little press conference thing down by the pitch side, and he's a lovely bloke. Whether he's a football manager in the making is probably an open question at this stage. Certainly on Saturday's evidence, you think he's probably got the ingredients for it. Whether at Millwall or somewhere else, yeah, he's going to be, you know, inexperienced. But that was a Neil Harris team playing what once were Neil Harris tactics, because we have played with that high tempo pressing style in the past with a team that was, you know, was constructed by Neil Harris. And it was all, you know, I've written on the notes here, was that Neil Harris's last performance? Because although he wasn't there, he was there, really, because that was his team, and that was the way they could have played all season. Why they weren't is another question. I don't know. I just think sometimes the thinking becomes, you know, becomes a bit of a cul-de-sac, and maybe you can't think your way out of the spot you put in.
It does make you think, doesn't it? Because, I mean, like we're saying about the tactics, everything like that. It's when managers go, or managers who feel that they've done their time or are sacked or whatever reason they go, and everyone thinks, you know, they've taken as far as we can go. The next game, let's be honest, teams tend to do well, but then they don't sort of talk positively about the manager. So when Mourinho left Man United and Solskjaer came in, or you had the caretaker, you know, no one spoke about how great a manager Mourinho was, etc. But it's strange how the tactics were completely different. The style of play was completely different. Everything was different to a Neil Harris performance. Yet there was videos released saying about, you know, how important Neil was to the club.
Mm-hmm.
It does make the mind boggle slightly, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, Adam Barrett turned around and said that when it was announced, and you know, on the Thursday, that there was people at the training ground crying, there were tears everywhere on Friday.
I can believe it. I don't think there's any Millwall fans actually happy. They're happy that the kind of the period of dull football has come to an end. I think what happened with Neil Harris is, and this happens probably to all football managers, in the end, it takes a rare individual, and you talk about probably only the greats that can preside over one football club for such a long period of time with any success. So by the greats, I'm probably thinking of at Manchester United, Sir Alex Ferguson. Yeah. Who else is there? Can preside for that long. And yet somehow retain that verve and energy, because what seems to happen with managers, and I think this is what happened with Neil Harris, is they become boxed in by fear, and you go out to not lose a game rather than to go out and win it. So,
yeah,
you know, you go back to the great teams, you know, United in their pomp, Liverpool in their pomp, Arsenal when they were on top for a while, teams worried about them. You know, the great Millwall teams did not, we didn't go out to contain the opposition. We let them worry about Millwall coming at them in front of 15,000 fans at the Den. That's kind of what we got served up on Saturday, 16,000 in the Den, maximum atmosphere, Millwall playing high tempo football from the front backwards. It's a very hard thing to contain. And I just think Neil became fearful.
Mm.
And when it's like anything in life, when you become fearful, you don't, you know, operate at your best.
I think one thing we've got to say, Nick, is that, you know, in this division, which is basically a hotbed of sack a manager. I mean, you look at it, yesterday there were two. I think Reading got rid of Jose Gomez, Barnsley sacked.
Stendhal, isn't
he? They didn't sack him, but he's
gone, basically. Yeah.
He left, and I think he had a party with some Barnsley fans, which is actually absolutely brilliant. You know, you look at the ambition of clubs and where they are, and sort of how sort of quickly they're willing to pull the trigger. I mean,
yeah.
In reality, Neil Harris got a good old run at it. He got a really good run at it.
Oh,
he
got a very fantastic long run. Yeah, very, very good run, especially by today's standards. I mean, I always used to chuckle to myself when a manager would, or when the sort of longest serving manager would get sacked, or when there'd be a stat that would say, like, when it'd say, like, Neil Harris, longest serving manager, 18 months, or Eddie Howe, when he was, you know, when he went back to Bournemouth, Eddie Howe, longest serving Premier League manager, 2 years, 3 months. And you think, in the day-to-day world outside of football, to be in a job for 2 years, you're still
still relatively new. That's right. You're still learning it.
Exactly. So for a manager to get 4 years, and let's be honest, apart from that season where we when we finished eighth, you know, the start to the campaign of League One when he was first appointed, people were calling for his head, or sections were calling for his head within 10 games. You know, we shouldn't have appointed Harris. He won't get us out of League One. And then, you know, he's had a few moments where he's flirted with relegation, where a lot of the time other managers in other clubs would have been gone. I mean, we spoke about Gary Rowett as a possible contender.
He seems to be the hot ticket at the moment, doesn't he, Gary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but remember, he got sacked when he was in fifth place with Birmingham, and you know, Birmingham weren't happy. Achtung, Milbein.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I generally don't think we're the kind of club, nor are we the kind of fan base. I really hope we're not the kind of fan base that would demand for a manager to be sacked when they're in fifth place in the league going for the playoffs. Or there's been others. I mean, you know, players that haven't achieved automatic, have been sacked. And it's what you might call the being spoiled by success. The idea of a right to be...
I mean, Jack Ross of Sunderland just smells of Sunderland feeling entitled to be out of league.
Yeah. I really hope that we never fall into that trap, because, you know, in fairness to Neil Harris, you know, that football last season was pretty dreary. We just about escaped relegation by the skin of our teeth. And this season was, the football again has been dreary. And it was shaping up to be, you know, part another season like we did last year. So for that reason, I think he went with honour and went with dignity. He clearly seen that he couldn't go any further. And that was very much the feeling of the fan base. So we'd reached a logical conclusion, but we're not like, I really hope we're never going to get into that kind of situation you just described there, where Rowett was sacked at Birmingham in fifth place. I think that other clubs have done similar things in the past. But I mean, what we can't expect someone like Gary Rowett, and 6-5 betting on the Paddy Power list that I looked at earlier on, it may have changed now, but I don't think we can expect that same degree of Millwall loyalty. That may be a good thing and it may be a bad thing, because I sometimes wonder whether Neil Harris being steeped in Millwall, whether that was both a strength and a weakness at the same time, because, you know, there was an emphasis on a Millwall type player. Do we need that? Do you need a special quality to play at the Den, or do you just need to be someone that plays to the best of your ability? I don't know. Well, it'd be an interesting change to bring something completely from the outside, because for some time now with Neil and you know, manager Jacket being the previous good example, we've kind of looked inwards rather than outwards. I just wonder whether it's time to now bring someone in that can actually add something to the club, raise the standards.
Just looking at I mean, the options now, there's three championship jobs available. I mean, the names floating around are absolutely crazy. You've got three championship jobs and the League One job available. Millwall, I mean, the current odds with our current betting partner, who we don't have one. Actually, if you want to be a betting partner,
I get tapped up every now and again. I get the messages in my inbox on Twitter from the most obscure betting companies wanting to do a tie-in with us. I don't think the listeners want to listen to a regular betting slot, in my opinion.
It's like Daffer Bet, who sponsor all these. Who has actually genuinely bet with Daffer Bet before? They're based in like the Philippines, but yeah, go on.
I generally don't have a problem with people having a bet. I've been brought up in a household that bet on horse racing, dog racing. I know what betting is, and I don't restrict anyone. I don't think anyone would have listened to it as part of a podcast. If you tune into this show for any reason at all, listeners, I think you want to listen to a bit of football and related talk, not to have someone's advertising for us down your throat any more than you have to get the show. So if any betting companies are listening to it, don't bother me. I'm not going to do it. I'm not interested in your money.
Michael a shout. We'll do well with the sponsor.
Aaron and Michael, they're
more interested in that than me.
Yeah, you know those bits in Wayne's World where Wayne and Garth are like opening pizza boxes and it's got pizza on it, that kind of thing. That'll be us. You'll see us down the den with
Daffer Bet
t-shirts.
Mate, no. Husky Bet.
Husky Bet. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, what's the odds on actually getting a Husky chocolate in the UK? There you go.
We have to have an advert to pay for the show because that's what Acast do, but I wouldn't have any adverts otherwise. But there we are, enough of that. Gary Rowett, I don't have any problem with Gary Rowett. I was reading up on him earlier on. He's had some success at Birmingham. Was it Derby he took them to? And Burton, he's taken them to various levels.
Burton was back to back promotions, not back to back to back, but it was back to back. League One to the Championship.
So, you know, he seems like a fairly solid choice. I don't have a problem with him. And we're not going to get anyone that's really. I mean, the exciting names are the ones that you know are going to be disastrous. You know, I mean, the looking at the Tim Cahill 12-1 on Paddy Powers. Listen, Kevin Musket.
Stephen Reed is
interesting.
You know what? Give it to him because apparently he's coached at Crystal Palace and he's coached at Wimbledon as assistants, and they all love him. And he's left after every gig. And I just wonder if he's looking for maybe an opportunity to take a main job. Stephen Reed, I mean, Roy Keane at the Den would just be, oh, wow. Wow.
It would be, I don't know. I mean, Roy Keane, the player, I admire tremendously. He was one of the best midfielders I've ever seen play. And, we saw him a few times when we were in Division One. I think he was playing for Forest then and obviously went on to bigger and better things with United. Great, great player, an immense player. As a manager, there seems to be, he doesn't seem to be the most... what's the word I'm saying? The most empathetic man manager there is, and he demands the same high levels that he set himself, and that's both a good thing, but it's how you achieve that can be destructive. And I always get a sense his managerial career crashes and burns because of that lack of empathy.
Well, he's gone. I was just going to say
with the King thing, apparently when he was at Ipswich, he would do things in training, show him how to do something. But like you were saying, Nick, with his high standards, he obviously didn't realise, or he probably realised it, but again, didn't care that people weren't at his level. So when he could hit a 30-yard pass or like, you know, do this bruising slide tackle or anything like that, he couldn't comprehend why a professional footballer weren't able to do that as well. Rather than work on the strengths of the other, like your teammates or those you pick,
yeah,
he would berate them, and that would be, I'm not being funny, there's a lot of middle players who can't make a 5-yard pass, let alone a 30-yard pass, so we'll be disastrous at the moment.
I think the thing with Keane, and you get a sense of it when you watch him on the punditry on TV, is that he demands, rightly demands, not perfection, but he demands maximum commitment to the cause, and that would find great favour with the Millwall support, which also commits maximum effort to the cause. But I think it comes back to what you've just said there, Michael. Not many players, very few players can play at his level. And I think he just slightly lacks that ability to understand that not everyone is Roy Keane and can be Roy Keane. I think in a different way, Glenn Hoddle used to suffer from this because he could do things with the football that others couldn't. And yeah. I think that sometimes it leads to a distance. And, you know, I suppose what I'm thinking with Roy Keane is that he's played under some truly great managers. He's played under Brian Clough and then under Sir Alex Ferguson, both of whom, you know, were perhaps the greatest managers in the game in the last 50, 60 years, perhaps. And so he's got much to give. And I think he has a huge amount he can pass on to players. But there's a certain screw loose, isn't there, in the makeup. I can't picture him at the Den. I just can't. I think it'd be a disaster.
Well, there you go. He's second favourite. I don't know what betting partner's given us that. Adam Barrett's in there. Tim Cahill.
Yeah, Cahill. Interesting. I don't think he's qualified as a coach. I don't know if you can be a manager unless you have qualifications. Is that?
I think you can, as long as you've got your you're showing evidence that you've got your coaching right. badges. Because I think that's right. Isn't that right, Aaron? What happened with Southgate when he got the Middlesbrough job?
Yeah, he starts the badges, and then you've got to go on and sort of complete them. I can't see Cahill being given it. You know, I don't sort of see the point of giving it to Cahill.
No, I don't see Tim. I mean, when he came to the squad. 2 seasons ago now, wasn't it? When we signed him, and it was like the last footballing job of his career. I thought that was great. His playing contribution was minimal, apart from a forearm smash on the Fulham player when he came on in that final Fulham game. He did a great final forearm smash on him. What would he be like as a manager? He would bring glamour. He would bring a contact book second to none. Maybe only Keane could match him for contacts. Whether that would encourage anyone to come to the Den, I don't know. Clearly, he's played at a high level, so he would understand, you know, how to set a team out. But you just get a sense that that's a glamour appointment rather than an actual sensible appointment. Whereas a Rowett has got some body of work behind him, and it makes more sense for someone like a Rowett or possibly some of the other names at the bigger prices. I mean, we've mentioned Reed. Muscat, I don't know. I mean, we can only judge him as a player. I don't know what he's like managing in Australia, but you know, if we're criticising Keane for having a screw loose, then we've probably got to say that the engine itself is loose.
We had like conversations, sort of, you know, on WhatsApp and whatnot. We talked about the different options, and I've sort of categorised it into sort of three ways. You can either go for the complete sort of merry-go-round of manager.
Yeah.
You go for someone, you know, who is brand new, i.e. a Cahill or an Adam Barrett or someone of that ilk. Or you can go for a manager who's looking to rebuild his stock. And Chris Coleman in at 20-1, you know, isn't a bad shout. A lot of people obviously concerned that he got Sunderland relegated. But then again, you always expected Sunderland to get relegated. They were shit. They were so bad it hurt. You know, Cookie Coleman... Rowett, I think, fits into that category. I'm surprised Paul Clement's name hasn't been chucked about a bit more. I'm really surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I got told off for suggesting him, and I don't think he's such a mad suggestion as some of the other names that are seemingly shorter odds prices. I just found the website, thesackrace.com, is where I got those odds from. So Daniel Stendhal now has just left Barnsley. He's 12s, apparently, with Bet Victor. I mean... There's a certain pin the tail and the donkey quality to some of this because, you know, Joey Barton 25-1. I mean, Slaven Bilic at 25-1.
I'm surprised Adkins hasn't been, you know.
Adkins is in there. Yeah, 25-1. So quite long odds for Nigel Adkins.
Yeah, I think going back to your point, Aaron, what you were saying about like the Rowett and all these managers. I think that, and also sort of what you were saying as well before, Nick, about the culture of football now, there seems to be so many managers who are judged by their last job, if you get what I mean. It's like you were just saying there, Aaron, a good point about Coleman. Everyone's like, oh, they just remember what he did at Sunderland and how bad they were. And like Rowett, oh, they just remember what he's like at Stoke and everything like this. But again, you got like people got to remember that Coleman took a Gareth Bale side average Welsh team to the semi-final of the Euros.
He took a
Welsh team that was on its knees after the passing of Gary Speed, and he sort of got them back up and built them again. And it sort of goes into that Mark Hughes category, because I'm seeing a lot of things at the moment with Mark Hughes being like a poor choice for Reading if he ends up going there or wherever it is. But everyone's judging Mark Hughes by that sort of QPR managerial experience. They're not looking at Mark Hughes took Blackburn Rovers to the top six. Like, you know, he took Fulham to their highest position when he was there. And, you know, he was the one who managed to get some good players who got sort of quite a legendary status at Man City to the club, like the Vincent Kompanys and the Yaya Touré's and all these. So that's why when people say Rowett or they say people like that, I think we'll actually give him a chance, because everyone's focusing too much on that Stoke job, which Nathan Jones, who at the time, when he was at Luton, was the most sought-after manager in the lower leagues.
He's still in the job, by the way.
He's still going, yeah.
He's still going, but everyone's forgetting what he did at Luton purely on this Stoke job. Now, at the end of last season, he came out and said, this Stoke team have got players who think they're too good. This Stoke team's got players who don't want to be here. They think they're Premier League players. I've got to weed them out. He was starting to do that. He's still got a rebuild to do, but people are still saying, well, he should get sacked at the bottom of the league. They're not saying he's still got a rebuild to do. But going back to what you were saying as well, sorry if I'm going on a bit of a point here, but you were saying about the managers who want to rebuild the reputation. That's why I think someone you said before, Aaron Karanka, would be a fantastic appointment.
Karanka, I've just seen, is 25-1, according to Bet Victor, Ator Karanka. And Mark Hughes was on the list as well, but at 33-1. I mean, some of it goes off into the twilight zone at a certain stage, doesn't it? It depends. I mean, I think we touched on this last week, which was a show we made up pretty much on the hoof. Like, we don't make all these up on the hoof. But anyway, I just think it's what kind of club does Mill want to be? Because in a way, what Neil Harris created, and we saw it last Saturday after the burden being lifted of the weight of the season so far being lifted from our shoulders, in a way, that was what I think Millwall fans want the club to be. We're not a fancy club. We're not going to go spending fortunes on players. We're not going to throw money around like it's going out of fashion. But you had a fairly, you know, an honest squad of players. That whole team played to the absolute best of their ability. They're all players that you feel like you can talk to and relate to. And, you know, there are some of the Millwall fans within the team, Ben Thompson being the biggest example. And that's a team that the Millwall support can relate to. It plays football, fast, speedy, tight tackling, committed football. That's what we want. And, you know, do we want to become a kind of a play it around the back and knock it about kind of club like we see so many of? I don't think we've got the fan base that would support that kind of football in any long term. But I think we will support fast-paced offensive football. So which manager will produce that? Who's going to be the best at coming up with that? That'd be my first question if I was on the interview panel at the Mill, you know, in the Mill interviews.
Well, you've been speaking.
We shall see.
Nick.
Oh, Holloway. Yeah. He's on the list. He's 33-1 to make a comeback. Achtung, Millwall. Ian Holloway. He's been trying to. He's clearly trying to rehabilitate his image. He's doing a lot more media work. He's done an interview with, I think that was with thesackrace.com. You can find it online. I think he's trying to soften his image a little bit with his period at Mill, which was disastrous. I mean, it was the most all management in the end comes to some kind of juddering halt. We know that. The last one I can think of like the end of Ian Holloway was Michael. I don't know if you remember Mark McGee when he went. That there was the crowd turned quite. And I mean, obviously, we had the Lomas thing where the crowd turned, but that was probably a shorter burst of management. But to see a manager hounded out of the club like we did with Ian Holloway is quite something. You know, it doesn't happen very often on that level.
And I think it's quite a sight for those who haven't experienced it before in other clubs.
Yeah, I mean, there's the classic car park gathering. You know, you know when it's happening. The crowd turns inside the stadium. The car park turns into a kind of a security zone. The police and the riot squad are on hand, ready to go. And you know that the manager's going to be gone fairly soon because it can't be tolerated. It doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, you know all about it. And Holloway, I think one of his quotes was that he said he took the job too soon, but somehow Mill came a flattering and offered him the money and he took the role. I just find Ian Holloway, trying to think the least libelous words I can, I've got to stand by this potentially. I just think there's something of an empty shell about the man. I was never impressed with him as a football manager. His teams never looked authentic, and there's a lack of authenticity to him. On the one occasion I met him, I asked myself, would I follow this man into the trenches? Having heard him do his executive lounge pre-match speech that he used to do, and I just thought, no, he's a bumptious little upstart. You wouldn't take him seriously, and I didn't think of him as a leader of men at that point. And events proved me right. So, if you want to listen to this stuff, it's online. You can find it. I think he's trying to get himself back into work again. I think he's had enough of the media. He's trying to get back into the job.
I had enough of talk sport, Luke. Moving on. Where are we time wise? Are we getting on top? Oh shit, look at the time. Should we have a club shop update?
Yeah, let's have a club shop update. Ground floor perfumery, stationery and leather goods, wigs and haberdashery, kitchenware and
food. Like, oh.
Before we do that, shall we just mention Lee Dolby's
escapade? Is he from the Dolby surround sound family?
I think he's from the former Millwall striker Tony Dolby, wasn't it? Who played for the Lions a few
years
ago.
Tony Dolby, that's a name.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. And I think Lee Dolby. I'll just do this before you do your club show update, Michael. Because I've actually held it over from last week's show. I just think it's. You know, this is a club that's that wants to start redeveloping the area, the Bermondsey area, play with the property big boys, and yet it can't organise the club shop can't organise the numbers for Lee Dolby to get his son, who was a mascot at Huddersfield a few weeks ago. He couldn't get the numbers to have Matt Smith number 10 on his shirt, so they'd run out of numbers.
pure fabrication, don't believe it.
So Lee posted this on Twitter. And I have no reason to disbelieve Lee, and I have every reason to believe this is the truth, because we all know the club shop. Lee had to shoot down to Charlton to buy the numbers, to bring back to the Millwall shop for them to print number 10, Smith, on the back of his boy's shirt, so he could wear that up at Huddersfield. In fact, there's a really nice video of his little boy doing G'ing up the players as they come off with the said shirt, number Matt Smith, on his back. So... That's not the most damning thing. A club shop that runs out of numbers and letters for their shirts is
or never had them in the first place.
Never had them in the first place.
I popped in on Saturday. It looked like, you know, one of them sort of art galleries, like a pop-up art gallery with white walls everywhere. Shit sporadically spread everywhere. Like, I mean, like, it was just a bit dodge, really. It was like there's just. Like, usually when you see club shops, they're like sort of amalgamations of crests everywhere. Like,
yeah.
You know, sort of like everything screen printed onto places. And it's just a bit bland, really.
It is utter shit. It always has been.
How dare you?
Seemingly always will be.
How dare you?
But let's run the music. Away you go, Michael. Club shop update.
Here we go. Here we go, everyone. Thank you, Neil Harris, for ruining last week, but it's back this week. So, the clue's in the title of what this one is, everyone. The gift voucher, £10.
Gift voucher, okay.
So, are you having trouble knowing what to get your little one from the club shop?
Well, Lee Dolby did, yep. That's for sure.
Sorry, Dolby. Would you feel slightly embarrassed buying the oversized darts-playing woman in your life another oversized top, but want to give her the opportunity to do it herself?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You would. And has the limited stock levels, Aaron, as you were talking about, forced you to settle just for a piece of rectangular paper?
Yeah, that's Nick's birthday, Christmas and Hanukkah.
Sorted.
There we are. Well, if the answer to any of these is yes, then get to the Millwall Club shop where you can be the owner of a gift voucher, £10.
Oh, they're doing vouchers. Voucher.
There you go. Well, Nick, this is for you. Imagine your wife's beaming face when she opens a Millwall birthday card, which is also from the personalised section of the club
of
shop,
to
see this wonderful and thoughtful present you have bought her for her next visit to Zampa Road.
Wonderful and thoughtful be the first words on her lips when she got this Millwall club shop £10 gift voucher.
Please note, I am currently not in stock. Yes, you heard it right. A piece of printed paper is not in stock.
They can't even get the gift vouchers sorted out.
No, because the printer's run out of ink.
Oh my God almighty, they can't even get the gift vouchers.
It's run out of ink, so you know.
So should I do the next one then, boys?
Please do.
So even if you haven't got your gift vouchers, but so anyway, let's imagine you have. Are you going to go for a Millwall 1885 holder? That is that breaking? I've seen that brand on another video channel somewhere, 1885 holder. Are you struggling for somewhere to put your 10-inch Zampa? Your singular flip-flop, you have one flip-flop, and the golf glove that has the magic ball maker. If the answer to these questions are yes, then pack up your troubles in your old kit bag with a state-of-the-art Millwall 1885 hold-all from the Millwall Club shop. At a fantastic bargain price of £25. You two can be the owner of a bag that looks like it's come from... Oh, there's a picture of it. Owner of a bag that looks like it's come straight off the production line of Mike Ashley's business empire with a Millwall logo on it. Note, item not currently in stock. If you have a holiday book, make sure you order it as soon as possible. So there's a 7-day lead time. Just having a look at it. Not bad. Holdall.
£25?
Seems a lot for 25. That's a lot of big price for £25. If it was on The Apprentice, you'd be saying, I'd want £9.99 for that, really. That would seem a good price for that Holdall. But it is out of stock and ordered 7 days. So even if you did want it, you can't get it. The Millwall 1885 Holdall. There we are.
Yeah.
Go down Elephant and Castle Market and you'll be able to get something sort of similar.
Absolutely. Aaron, you're going to take the knitted jacket?
No. You know my rule in this one, Nick. I always save them. You know, I don't open the document, pal, because I enjoy, you know, sort of the... It's like, you know, the old news at 10 thing. If you don't want to see the scores, look away now.
All right. Well, I'm going to go for the Millwall knitted jacket. I'm going to seize the next item, grab it for myself. Summer... Chaps and listeners, is over and those cold, wet nights are upon us, but never fear. The Millwall Club Shop is the place to be for the top-of-the-range designer autumn clothing.
It's
a zip-up knitted jacket. It's all right. Not bad. For the amazing bargain price of £30, I'd want to see it and feel it and hold it before I'm passing my £30. But anyway, that's got a 33.33% reduction. That's £15 off the original £45. That's a lot. £45 a lot.
£45 for a jump.
You can be the proud owner of the very latest navy jacket with Millwall emblazoned over the heart. Note, items not currently in stock.
Can we have the theme tune to Surprise, Surprise, Cilla Black on?
Not in stock. So maybe we can postpone the autumn for a few weeks until we can get that in stock. Who knows?
Yeah, and as it says there, just what you need for autumn and winter, wool.
Wool, yeah, wool jacket. Mm-hmm. Last one on the list then is another gift voucher, Michael. You want to take this one?
Yes, I will. So, the younger sister of gift voucher £10 is gift voucher £5. So, Aaron, are you still finding it hard to get anything from the club shop at all, including a gift voucher £10? Can you find it difficult to believe that the club shop do not have a printed piece of paper with £10 written on it?
I told you, man, they ain't got no toner.
I suppose.
Have you come to the conclusion, very Da Vinci Code, that maybe buying 2 £5 gift vouchers could be the answer?
Well, that would add up. Yeah, for sure.
Indeed. Well, if the answer to these is a resounding, you're right, Michael. Then get online and get ordering the gift voucher £5 from the online store.
I can't believe.
What's it next? Not in stock.
It's October the 10th now, chaps, isn't it? So Christmas is what, 2 months away. You'd want to get your gift voucher market ready and in place. Any normal emporium would have a gift voucher market ready to go, really, because this is going to be the kind of the next few weeks that'll be critical for the Christmas market, really, aren't they? And I know, I mean, the other thing, I'm no retail shark, but I do know that gift vouchers, professionally done, tend to have a kind of a code the coding process. You can't just photocopy them and you know, take a 10 and give out a photocopy bit of paper with £10 written on it.
You're thinking about it too much.
Am I overthinking it? Because otherwise people go away and photocopy the gift voucher a few times.
This is meant to be a parody section, Nick.
So sharp.
No, please continue.
But it shouldn't, I mean, it should be normal stuff for a retailer, gift vouchers. There are companies out there that will do this for you, you know, that you don't have to, they will lay this on for you, won't they? I mean, it can be done. I just find the whole club shop, it's endlessly useless. It's incredible. But anyway, there we are. Can I conclude the show? Thank you for doing that, Michael.
No, you're welcome. More club shop update next week.
Can I conclude the show? Because we probably want to crack along, chaps. The NHL, the National Hockey League, Philadelphia Flyers have introduced a fine idea. I thought maybe we could bring this into the den, which is a rage room, somewhere you can go and exhaust your rage in whether that be on you know, on the manager or on a player or the performance you've just seen. But they go in, they've put together a rage room where you can go in there and smash up stuff like TVs, dishware, bottles and guitars. You can smash a guitar up in there with a variety of tools, including baseball bats, sledgehammers and ice hockey sticks. Yeah. I was just thinking what kind of things we could have in the Millwall Rage Room. We could certainly have like a punch bag, couldn't we, with perhaps Ian Holloway's face printed on it. You could punch your way through Ian Holloway or, you know, managers from the
Cars. The NHL are obviously just following the example of the venue on a Saturday night.
maybe YouTube podcasts, so you can put them on there so you can take it out. Back.
Possibly.
That's probably a good time to call the show to quit something.
Very, very quickly on World Mental Health Day, just want to say, chaps, you know, that a lot of people listen to podcasts and radio just to sort of get away from things. So if we're making a difference, then, you know, just let us know. Keep on listening. If we can be of any help, then, you know, that's what we want to be. So, yeah, you know, ask twice. I think is the hashtag everyone's using.
Absolutely. Good call.
It leaves me to say, and it was delightful to hear this man's wonderful dulcet tones on Saturday. We'll catch you next week. International break. Nick, you watching anything this week? Where are you off to this week? Anything
good? Nothing planned for this week. So I might watch England play Friday night, don't they, I think. So I might take the chance to watch that. And I think, is it Friday and Monday for the England fixtures? I can't remember how it runs. But no, I'll certainly watch England, maybe one or two of the others. I always keep half an eye on Gibraltar just to see how Gibraltar are doing as well. So I think they're playing
tonight. He's 1/8 Gibraltar breeze. Listeners,
I do have some swarthy blood in me. I don't know. I've always wondered which particular ship at the Surrey Docks one of my ancestors must have come from, because I do have some swarthiness in me. That's true.
For me, it's all about the Cipollina footballing dynasty, because there's about seven generations of the Cipollina family who insist on like playing for Gibraltar, even though they're like in their 40s. It's just fun to watch. Michael, you off to anywhere this weekend, Michael?
No. Taking it easy, as Nick says. I'll be watching the Friday and Monday games.
Yeah.
And just taking it, putting the feet up and looking for more stuff in the club shop.
Well, if anyone fancies it, I've got a couple of spaces. But I'm off to Exeter versus Newport.
Newport. Yeah, Radio 5 again.
A nice trip down to Exeter on Saturday morning, they're more than welcome to jump in.
Pass on that, mate. Sorry. I'll catch you, Nick. I'll catch you soon.
See yourself. Mike Wavery, that leaves you to say.
Bye for now.
Oh, ho, Bermondsey. That's home to me. I'm longing for a moment when I shall see the happy, laughing, razor-slashed faces of the people I love.
You've been listening to Octoon Millwall, the CBL Magazine podcast. That's the Millwall news this week, and we are out of here.
And now I miss the smell of the gasworks and the people I love. I've so many childhood memories of that quaint old-fashioned town. There was a quaint old-fashioned schoolhouse till the school kids burn it down. I'm off to Bermondsey. They love a fight. Gosh, oh.